From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. We've got a great show for you today. Joining us later on will be Secretary of Education Margaret Spelling. She'll play our Not My Job game. Of course, we'll be playing under the rules set by the administration's No Child Left Behind law. That means if she does well in our test, we'll get millions of dollars in federal funding. If, on the other hand, she does poorly, we'll be canceled, and you, our audience, will be distributed to other shows. So we're going to give her enough time to memorize the correct answers we sent her on the sly. First, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Diane from Utica, New York.
Hey, how are things in Utica?
Oh, it's winter here.
Yeah. It's like that all over.
Yeah. We get a good dose of it here.
This is just between you and me. It's winter here in Chicago still,
mm-hmm.
And I'm losing my mind. I can't take it anymore. How about you?
Well, we had sunshine today, so that helped a little bit.
You're a kind person.
Yes.
Well, welcome to our show, Diane.
Thank you. Let me
introduce you to our esteemed panel this week. First, say hello to comedian Paul Prevenza.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Paul.
I've missed you.
Also say hello to the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, thusly somebody who can help you with what Paul just said, Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Amy.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author, most recently, of Long Time Leaving Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Roy.
Well, I thought... Boy, Diane, I thought our relationship was strained.
I thought you'd never say... Do you still have the Utica Blue Sox there?
Oh, no. They've gone by the...
Oh.
They flew away.
Go, you Utica Blue Sox. And they went.
That's not what we meant, said the fans. Well, welcome to the show, Diane. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time, our traditional beginning. Carl Castle will read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Yay.
Ready to go?
Okay.
All right, here is your first quote.
Now it's on to the death march in Pennsylvania.
That was David Korn. Writing in Mother Jones, expressing his feelings about a contest that is turning into the longest-running drama since Gunsmoke. What?
That would be the Democrat primary.
It would be. Very good. It is. It is freakishly like one of those old TV shows, like The Fugitive, say, in which the hero never quite catches the villain and the villain never quite kills the hero, just so the conflict can go on to another episode. Mm. That's the Democratic Party. Right now, except the Democrats can't even agree on who's the hero, who's the villain.
And you notice lately they've been riding past the same cactuses over and over.
Yeah, you see? In fact, we think this is so creepily like a TV show, we think it is one. You think it's Democracy, it's really one of those strange, secretly scripted reality shows, you know? And I mean...
I'm a politician, get me out of here.
Exactly. It could be like a sitcom. If you were to throw in Bill Clinton's weird quasi-candidate status, you could call it 2.5 Democrats.
See, I think they should. I think Clinton and Obama should handcuff themselves to each other and run like the defiant ones.
Exactly. They can't escape.
What trap? They need each other.
Well, I think that there could be a kind of TV influence in that, you know, the Clinton campaign, it seems to me, is getting more and more shamelessly inventive in what they accuse. They accused the Obama campaign of dragging Kenneth Starr tactics into it.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
I mean, once people say things like that, it's hard. And Brock tries to be, well, that's ludicrous. You can't go around saying that's ludicrous. I think what he ought to, and on the other hand, he can't be mean. Everybody says he can't be mean. So he should adopt this sort of honeymooners thing where whenever Hillary
says, to the moon!
To the moon, Hillary! And, why oughta?
Yeah, so he should. So he should comically threaten to beat her.
Yeah.
That you think?
Yeah,
would be a successful tactic.
With a wink.
Diane, your next quote is actually a selection of quotes. They come from one man speaking at a joint press conference on Wednesday.
I hope that the president will find time from his busy schedule to be out on the campaign trail with me.
And?
I'll be glad to have the president with me in keeping with his schedule.
And?
I'm pleased to have him as it fits into his busy schedule.
Who basically said to the press, look, guys, enjoy seeing me with the president because this is the last time I'm going to admit knowing him until I get inaugurated.
That would be John McCain.
John McCain, of course. Very good. The day he clinched the Republican nomination, John McCain journeyed to the White House for one of the weirdest passings of the torch ever. Mr. Bush came out to wait for the McCains in front of the assembled press corps, and when his guests did not arrive, he actually began, this is true, to tap dance for the cameras, the President of the United States. But anyway, McCain showed up and they did their thing. And here's what's odd. McCain, as you heard, kept insisting over and over again that the president just may not be able to appear with him on the campaign trail because of the president's busy schedule. And just this week, Mr. Bush spent his 879th day in office at his ranch in Crawford, breaking Ronald Reagan's record for presidential vacationing. All right, Diane, your last quote is actually a joke being told right now in Russia.
Putin and his friend sit in a restaurant. Putin says, I'll have the steak. The waiter says, and what about the vegetable? And then Putin says, he'll take the steak too.
Ooh. Ooh. So. Ooh. We got that from the LA Times. Who is this friend of Putin who is the butt of jokes in Russia?
And you don't have to pronounce it right because...
Because Hillary couldn't pronounce it
right,
either,
right? Right,
right.
So if she can't, we can.
Medvedev or something?
Yeah, and I'll give it to you. It's the new president, Dmitry Medvedev, we think. That's the closest I'm going to go.
Do you think his name sounds like, you know, when you run a tape backwards,
yes.
It's like...
Medvedev.
Medvedev. Medvedev.
It actually means Paul McCartney is dead.
Yeah.
The 42-year-old lawyer was handpicked by President Putin to succeed him. He was overwhelmingly elected to the presidency of Russia. Sources say, though, that Putin was first tempted to install an actual lapdog, say a nice Pekingese, but his advisors warned him that that would be showing off. In his victory speech, Medvedev promised, quote, I shall be my own man, and I shall strive only for what is best for Russia, and I'm sorry, Vladimir, the headset stopped working. Could you repeat that? Unquote. Carl, how did Diane do on our quiz?
We started the show with a winner, Peter. Diane had 3 correct answers, so Diane, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Yay!
Right now, panel, time for you, of course, to answer some questions about the week's news. Amy, relations between the press and Hillary Clinton have never been good. Well, this week they didn't get any better when during an event at an auditorium in Austin, Texas, the Clinton campaign set up the media room where?
In the ladies' lavatory. No, that wasn't it.
You're awfully close. You're right next door.
In the men's lavatory.
In the men's room, yes. You can tell it's a men's room because of the urinals behind the reporters as they're filing their story and the pictures of the event. At all campaign events, of course, the press are set up in a media room equipped with TVs, computer connections, refreshments, baited leg traps. On Monday night, as Senator Clinton gave a speech at Austin's Burger Center, the press found themselves typing away next to the urinals, as I said, in a large men's restroom. The Clinton spokesman says, these accommodations should in no way be taken as a comment on the quality of our media coverage.
And it's so great that Larry Craig wasn't there. One more Larry
One
Craig.
More, yeah. That's for old time's sake.
Can you imagine, like, the radio reporters filing, and they're like, what's that echoey, what's the flushing sound?
And it was particularly sad when somebody was doing a live feed on ABC, and somebody in the background could be heard yelling for Maureen Dowd to give them a courtesy flush, please. Roy, a blow against liberty in Italy, an appeals court there ruled that Italian men will no longer, in their age-old ways, be allowed to do what in public?
You mean with regard to women in the street? Or
no, well,
like
this is something they've been doing for and to themselves for years in public, part of the Italian masculine way of life, but a judge says no, no longer, it's wrong.
Sort of hustling their crotch?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Let's wait for Amy to recover, and I'll go on.
Is this a known term?
I cleaned it up a little.
He did, and I appreciate it. Italian men have always traditionally, shall we say, reached for their best friend to ward off bad luck as when, say, a hearse drives by. At least that's why they say they're doing it. But in a ruling on a case in which a mechanic was fined about $300 for checking on the boss in public, the appeals court ruled, quote, "The rules of social etiquette require all of us to abstain from what might be considered offensive to public decorum," unquote. Mm. And further, that giving a handshake to your better half caused, quote, "awkwardness, disgust, and disapproval in the average man."
Giving five to little Guido.
And, of course, all of Italy went, "over here with your rules."
Yeah, that's right. Rearranging the family photo.
Come on now, touch me, babe. Can you see that I am not afraid?
Thank you, everybody. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mike Arsenal from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Boston?
Good. Cold.
Yeah, I know. A lot of that going around.
Yeah.
Is it driving you mad?
No, not really.
How do you deal with it?
Put on a jacket.
I should try that. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Mike's topic?
Here she is, Miss Irrelevant.
The Miss America pageant has fallen on hard times. Her television audience is down to nothing. Her crown is tarnished by occasional scandal. But we read a story this week that proved there are other beauty pageants out there, still going strong. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of pageants that could help revive our flagging interest in that peculiar form. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
That's what I'm shooting for.
All right. That's why you're here. Here we go. Let's first hear from Paul Prevenza.
Usually associated with bookish types of dubious social skills, Mensa, the high IQ club, has been making an effort to dispel the myth that smart women just aren't sexy. For a few years now, the Mensa Beauty Pageant has been selling out and thrilling crowds at their annual conference in Oslo, Norway. Last year's winner, Oxford student Jenneth Foster Hall, proved that not only can she be sexy and poised, but multi-talented as well. For the talent portion of the pageant, she twirled 10 batons simultaneously, accurately describing the orbits of the planets around the sun. She beat out tough competition from runner-up Jacqueline Green, who dazzled the crowd with a musical Fibonacci number.
The Mensa Beauty Pageant in Oslo, showing that beauty and brains are not incompatible. Your next story of a better beauty pageant comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
In the talent portion of the Miss Outdoors pageant in Golden Hill, Maryland, some contestants sing, some dance, and some of them skin a muskrat. This marshy rural area has an old muskrat trapping tradition and has long hosted a muskrat skinning contest. But only in recent years have muskrats had a role in the beauty pageant. In 2005, when Tiffany Brittingham walked on stage wearing sparkly earrings and full makeup and with a dead muskrat slung over her shoulder, a man in the audience yelled above the cheers, "I want to marry you!" Tiffany won the crown. Since then, other girls have followed in her footsteps. Says one of them, Samantha Phillips, "It's not weird. You can be graceful and beautiful and well-poised and skin a muskrat."
Skinning muskrats in a pageant in Eastern Maryland. Your last story about a beauty pageant comes from Amy Dickinson.
Here they come, lovely topiary. Birmingham, Alabama is host city next month to the American Topiary Society's annual Bonsai Bonanza Beauty Contest. Contestants hope to clip, shape, saw, and prune their way to a national hedgerow stardom. Entrants are expected to push their conifers down a runway and clip them in timed contest in shapes suggested by the judges. Categories include fabulous and flowering, deciduous darlings, cute and cuddly conifers, and shapely shrubs. In this year's talent bonus round, Entrance will prune a blue spruce to look like faded movie star Gary Busey. who sort of already looks like a pine tree.
All right, here are your choices. From Paul Provenza, a beauty pageant for Mensa members, beauty and brains. From Roy Blunt Jr., a beauty pageant in which the talent competition includes skinning a muskrat. And from Amy Dickinson, a beauty pageant not for people, but for topiary and bonsai plants. Which of these is the real story about a pageant in the week's news?
I can imagine the muskrat happening in some places, but the moving clipping of shrubs doesn't seem reasonable.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go with A.
You're going to have to go with A. You're going to go with Paul's story about a Mensa beauty pageant?
Beautiful and smart go together.
In which somebody sings out a series of Fibonacci numbers?
That sounds crazy, but I have to go with that.
All right, that's your choices. Paul's story. Well, we actually spoke to someone who has done a documentary about this very pageant to bring you the real answer.
So what you see is you see a young girl who's in high school come out in full makeup and sparkly earrings. She has her blow-dried and washed muskrat, which is dead, of course. She goes out to the end of the stage. She puts down a piece of cardboard so there's no blood on the stage. She skins the muskrat, and she goes backstage and puts on her evening gown.
They blow-dry the muskrat. That's just wrong.
Which thank goodness.
I think is another euphemism for the Italian thing.
I didn't hear rolling the pizza dough.
No.
Rolling the pizza dough.
That, of course, was Amy Nicholson. She is the director of the documentary Muskrat Lovely, describing what the audience sees during the talent competition these days of the Miss Outdoors pageant in Dorchester County, Maryland. So I'm so sorry, Mike. Roy had the right answer. You did not win, but you earned a point for Paul Provenza for his excellent idea.
Yes.
The Mensa beauty pageant. I recommend that to them. Mike, thank you so much for playing. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mike.
Muskrat, muskrat, candlelight, doing the town and doing it right in the evening. It's pretty pleasing.
And now the part of the show where we invite very important people on to answer questions about very unimportant things. Now, I want everybody listening to me right now to sit up straight in their chairs and face the blackboard as we welcome to our show the Secretary of Education of the United States of America, Ms. Margaret Spelling. Secretary Spelling, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, we're going to ask you some tough questions about your positions, okay? For example, where do you come down on the use of hall passes?
Local control.
Local control.
That's right.
That's right. So spitballs, detentions, those are all outside
those
of your bailiwick.
Those are sorts of things for, principles.
Right, I understand. Now, do you ever bring to your work your own experiences in grade school? I mean, do you say are you in essence having vengeance on a perhaps too aggressive gym teacher at one point?
No, but here's a little fun fact to know and tell. I am the first mother of school children to have this job.
That must make your parent-teacher conferences rather interesting.
Sometimes.
Oh, your kids are doing great, Secretary Spelling. It's just great.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Really? It doesn't? Do they give you the same guff we get?
Well, I know the terminology. I know the lingo a little better probably than your average mom
like
or dad.
Like detention? You get that.
Does it give you any credibility or added credibility when you're like helping your kids with their homework? I say the answer is A, and I can enforce that through federal fiat.
They're a little old for that sort of thing.
That's a shame.
When people introduce you, do they inevitably make some kind of reference to your name with regard to...
That happens. During my confirmation, one of the senators said that he was so glad that I was married because we wouldn't want any misspelling.
Ooh,
at the department.
There you go. There you go.
That was a real knee flapper. Huh?
Yeah.
But I have to say, though, that I am, in fact, speaking to Cabinet Secretary, a high place administration official, with a high TVQ. You were on the first most highest-ranking politician ever to appear on Celebrity Jeopardy.
Mm.
And the Daily Show.
And the Daily Show, and now this. So what is this?
I love this stuff. I'm a little nutty about it. I find it very entertaining, and I enjoy your show all the time.
Well, thank you.
I don't want to do that.
How'd you do on Jeopardy?
And they couldn't get me on the fifth grade show.
It would be funny to have the Secretary of Education play Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Well, it wouldn't be very funny if she wasn't. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Well, there you go. You don't want to take that risk. Mm. How'd you do on Jeopardy?
Came in second.
Came in second.
Yep.
Also known, and I speak from experience here, it's also known as losing.
Mm-hmm. Takes one to know one,
yeah,
Peter.
Yeah, oh, no, look, you and I both came in second in Jeopardy. Who beat you?
Michael McKean, but he's an actor, but he had been on a couple of times before, so he had a distinct advantage. As you know, it's all about the buzzer.
That is true, that those of us who have lost on Jeopardy know that the way to complain about it is to say that the buzzer timing is difficult.
Absolutely.
Oh, my. I have heard it all.
Yeah.
I would never cheat.
No.
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 It sounds to me like you got left behind.
All right, we're almost ready to play our game.
All right.
But I got one more question.
Okay.
And maybe you could have anticipated this coming because you know our show.
Right.
Is it true, Secretary Spellings, that you once turned down Karl Rove for a date?
Mm. Well, have you met Karl Rove?
Yeah. You guys go back a long time. I just want to say, it wasn't recent. This was...
No, this was a very long time ago, so this is just between us, right?
Oh, just between us. Everybody else is doing their homework. They're not listening,
right.
So...
We've seen him dance.
Honestly, I think it was a little bit awkward all the way around, and I wasn't even sure that was what he was asking.
Really? He didn't express himself clearly?
Yeah.
Can you describe what happened for us?
No!
Intensely curious. Oh, come on! I mean, you have just...
He's my good friend.
I'm sure he is. But okay. So you're standing there, and you're like, you know, he's in front of your locker, and you're like.
I mean, he told the story after the fact. I'm like, is that what's going on there?
I mean, you didn't even know that he was asking you out, and like he later says, "Oh, I asked her out." She said no, and you're like, "I did."
Well, he did it through intermediaries.
Yeah.
He had somebody spread rumors that you were dating him. Yeah. No, who knows? But that's curious. But we're just curious because I was like, you know, and you turned down Karl Rove.
Now, this is, you know, 25 years.
Oh, absolutely.
30 years ago.
These things don't go away.
Wow. Well, it's great you're still friends. I think
you're wonderful. Yeah, we're very good friends.
Speaking of
And both happily married.
I understand. Well, Secretary Spellings, we are delighted to have you with us. Now, as is only fair... Given your administration's emphasis on testing, we have a little test for you. It is a quiz that this week we're calling...
You are a 17th level mage with a wand of power and +8 charisma.
This week, the world lost Gary Gygax, the man who more than 30 years ago co-invented the fantasy role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons, thus saving generations of geeky kids like myself... from having to talk to girls at least until college. We're going to ask you three questions about the man known to us gamers as the great god Gygax. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Carl, who is the Secretary of Education playing for?
Peter, the Secretary is playing for Major Bob Munson, who is currently serving at Camp Taji in Iraq.
Mm. He's an active duty officer in the Air Force, and you're playing for him.
Wow.
Round of applause for the Major. All right, you ready to play?
I guess, but I don't know anything about that topic.
That's the whole point. Here we go. First question. Dungeons and Dragons, as you may or may not know, in that game, players take on the role of characters and they go on adventures. They're led by a referee called the Dungeon Master. In addition to writing the elaborate rules of the game, Gary Gygax created many scenarios for players to explore. One typical adventure he wrote was called... What? Was it A... Glacial Rift of the Frost Giant Jarl. B. Hero's Quest to the Elvish Pleasure Dome. Or C. Revolt of the Demon-Possessed Adamantine Dwarves.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess number two, something about the hero.
Hero's Quest to the Elvish Pleasure Dome.
I guess that's not it.
Oh, it might very well be it.
The Glacial Rift of the Frost Giant Jarl, Hero's Quest to the Elvish Pleasure Dome, or Revolt of the Demon-Possessed Adamantine Dwarves. Any one of which could represent hours of an adolescent's life whiled away.
It's A, isn't it?
You're going to go for A, Glacial Rift of the Frost Giant Jarl? Is that your choice?
Yes.
Yes, you're right.
Oh,
very
good.
Well. Good. give you a flavor of the game. Other scenarios written by the master himself included Queen of the Demon Web Pits and the Lost Caverns of Chokanth. However you say that. All right, that's good. You have one right. Let's go to your next question.
Okay.
D&D, as it is called, is not without controversy. Some say it could make its most devoted players crazy, which is nonsense. I'm fine. One controversy erupted just a few years ago when what happened? Was it A, James Sanders of Basking Ridge, New Jersey, was elected to city council after listing his status as a 31st level Iron Paladin as his primary qualification for office? B, the Israeli army automatically withdrew security clearances from any recruit who played the game because they were, quote, detached from reality. Yeah. Or C, a group of players in Tarzana, California, assaulted their dungeon master with empty Mountain Dew cans when he was discovered to be using loaded 20-sided dice.
I think it's the city council election.
That's your choice?
Yes.
No, actually, it was the Israeli army. D&D is very popular in Israel, and the Israeli Defense Force, just a few years ago, says they didn't like it. An army security official said, quote, one of the tests we do is to ask whether they take part in the game. If a soldier answers in the affirmative, he is sent to a professional for an evaluation, usually a psychologist. Mm. Oh, ye of little faith.
Mm. I got to remember that trick.
All right.
I better thank Major Munson for his service.
No, hang on.
You
still
have
some chance here. And remember, he's counting on
you. I'm pulling for you.
Here
we go. Okay. To get
it's your last question. You got one right with one to go. If you get this one right, you'll win.
Okay.
The game and its culture finally leapt from basement rec rooms to the big screen in 2000 with the release of the Dungeons & Dragons movie. The reviews were not kind. For example, what did Roger Ebert say about it? Did he say, A, quote, what kind of dice roll do I have to get to escape this theater? B, quote, the plot does not defy description, but it discourages it. Or C, quote, a more apt title for the film would be Dungeons and Dragons and overacting and sweating and stupidity.
I think the last one.
You think the last one? You sure about that?
I guess that means it's a no.
Well, I'm just saying.
Because we want Major Bob Munson.
Major Munson's out there.
Okay, let me see.
I mean, he is serving in Iraq.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
away from family and
mortars.
Orders follow.
Okay. How about the plot?
The plot. Number you two. You think so?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good choice. That's right.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
The plot does not defy description, but it discourages it. The movie was panned in general, even though Jeremy Irons played the villain. Who knew? So, Carl, how did Margaret Spellings do on our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. The secretary had two correct answers, so she's a winner for Major Bob Munson. Congratulations, secretary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And congratulations to Bob Munson.
Congratulations to Major Munson. Margaret Spellings is the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education. We are so pleased to have you. Madam Secretary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Peter, thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thank you. You too. In just 1 minute, Carl gets his newsmaker voices ready for another edition of Who's Carl This Time. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paul, border security, obviously an important issue in the United States, but also around the world. However, according to the Times of London, as a cost-cutting measure, Britain's new border patrol has been told it should no longer do what?
It should no longer show up for work. It should no longer patrol a border of some kind.
Yeah, you're actually right. The proposal is that they shouldn't guard the border or the ports of entry on holidays and weekends. Britain's Department of Treasury has issued edicts to all its departments to cut their budgets rather severely. In response, the Border and Immigration Agency, perhaps trying to make a point, announced that starting April 1st, on all weekends and holidays, British borders will be operating on the honor system. So you have people happening to enter the country on, say, Guy Fawkes Day. Well, there'll be a rubber stamp there in the desk. You stamp your own passport. There'll be a bin for any contraband you happen to have on you. And there'll be a photo array of suspected criminals. You inspect it. If you find your own picture, you reach your hand around, you grab your own collar, and you kick yourself out of the country.
I actually did. I actually drove from France into the UK, and you know, I had that long border wait there, and hours and hours and hours of waiting. And as we got there, the guy just leaned into the window and said, "All right, no smuggling today, then. All right, okay, all right,
all right, Chappy, cheer up now."
For real.
Yeah. No smuggling today. That's all he said.
No smuggling today.
It's no smuggling Wednesday.
Well, anybody who shows up in a submersible car capable of driving across the English Channel, Paul, is going to be treated with some respect. So, Roy, Russia's Federal Guard Service, Moscow's equivalent of the U.S. Secret Service, is implementing a strange new program at the Kremlin. Or at least we think so, because whatever it is, it's required the purchase of more than 3,000 what?
Little suction cups. 3,000 little, yeah. They're walking on the ceiling. I have no idea. Could you give me a hint?
Well, they also need 3,000 pounds of cheese.
Ooh. 3,000 mice?
Yes. 3,000 mice. Russia's Federal Guard Service does whatever it takes to keep the Russian president safe, and if that requires 3,200 white lab mice, so be it. Mm. The Kremlin posted an ad offering $21,000 for the mice, specifying that they...
Not to the mice. But
not to the mice, for the mice. Mice can't read, Ron.
No, that's right.
Yet.
Nor do they know what to do with $7 each. Mm-hmm.
The Kremlin specified that the mice be white, female, and weigh between 16 and 18 grams each. In other words, in the argot of personal ads, no fatties. The Kremlin isn't telling what it wants the mice for. There has been speculation that the mice will be food testers or be food, or perhaps they will be transformed by fairy godmothers into an army of invincible footmen for the new president. Just to be on the safe side, though, the U.S. Department of Defense just gave Halliburton a no-bid contract to provide $7 billion worth of cats. Roy, an inspirational story for you about recovery and love for one's pet. Sheila Weir from the British town of Crewe is hoping that her parrot will sleep better now that she's given him what?
A cracker.
No.
No?
It's usually the pirate that has this, not the parrot on your shoulder.
He's going to sleep better when he has an eye patch?
No.
No?
The other...
A bottle of rum?
No.
A peg leg, peg
there
leg,
you
peg,
are, leg, peg, leg, leg, leg,
peg
leg,
leg, peg leg, one leg, one leg. Would I? You know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were running out of pirate icons.
We were.
We were getting down to a sash,
a hook for a wing.
You know.
What does a parrot do with a cutlass? I don't get it.
Over a year ago, George, an African grey parrot, was attacked by a wild animal. Survived, lost a claw though. Now, whenever he tries to sleep, he slips off his perch and he squawks, "Bloody hell!" Well, this was no doubt amusing at first. Ms. Weir quickly grew weary of it and had George outfitted with a little prosthetic claw. He's still getting used to his new little fake leg. In fact, after his first good night's sleep, we hear George woke up and the first thing he said was, "Bloody hell!" Because he's a parrot. That's all he knows how to say.
I'm a parrot, I'm a parrot, I'm your closest friend. I say the same things all day long and drive you round the bend.
Piece of eight, piece of eight, he's a pretty boy.
Intelligent conversation is the one thing I enjoy.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sarah D. David from River Grove, Illinois.
How are things in beautiful River Grove?
They're nice. Yeah.
You know, on the suburbs of Chicago, they have names like Oak Forest, River Grove, Oak Grove. Do you ever have trouble finding your way home at night?
Sometimes I have the GPS for that.
Yeah, it's tricky. They've got like 900 towns and three words to describe them.
Yes.
Well, welcome to our show, Sarah. You're
going
to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle will read you three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain two of them, Carl, of course, will record the greeting in your home answering machine.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, so are we. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first quote.
I appreciate the fact that you really snatched defeat out of the jaws of those who are trying to defeat us.
That's somebody showing the world that after all these years, he's still got it.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh, can I have a hint?
Well, he's the guy in the news who talks like that a lot.
President Bush.
Say again?
President Bush.
President Bush. Of course, President Bush. On Thursday, President Bush held a photo op in the Oval Office to thank Lieutenant General Ray Odierno for his service as commanding general in Iraq. And once again, the president displayed the kind of clear thinking that helped him make the decision to go to war in the first place. The best part? This time, unlike other instances, the White House did not adjust the transcript to say what Mr. Bush really meant.
Mm. They just decided, oh, the hell with it.
Yeah, really.
What
do we got to prove at this point?
What?
We assume what he was just trying to say that the defeaters in Iraq didn't win because they've been defeated, I guess. All right, here, Sarah, is your next quote.
Republicans don't nominate bass-playing, varmint-eating populists who point out the failings of CEO presidents.
That's The Nation magazine advancing one theory as to why a certain man's quest for the GOP nomination came to an end this week. Who?
Mr. Huckabee.
Mike Huckabee, yes. Was it just 2 months ago that the Arkansas governor, previously best known for once being fat, surprised everyone by winning the Iowa caucuses? He rose high via his appeal to evangelicals, but fell fast because the phrase President Huckabee sounded like something from a comedy sketch about a chapter of the Rotary Club. His departure from the campaign led to speculation that he is now going to pursue his real dream job, talk show host. You can imagine him coming out on stage and surprising his studio audience with free gifts. You're going to heaven, and you're going to heaven. And, well, not the guy with the dreadlocks, but the person behind him is going to heaven. Here is your last quote.
He has given me 17 years of terrible Monday mornings. I'm going to go to church tomorrow and thank the Lord that he retired.
That was Vito Lissandro of Rockford, Illinois. He's a Chicago Bears fan. He was telling the Register Star newspaper that he is overjoyed now that what football star has finally retired?
That would be Brett Favre.
Brett Favre. Very good. The man who confounded opposing teams' defensive lines by spelling his name as if it pronounced Favre, but pronouncing it Favre. They just couldn't deal with that. Retired at a tear-filled ceremony this week. He played 275 consecutive games over 16 seasons with the Green Bay Packers. He established records of all kinds, and he won the Super Bowl in 1997. Big foam cheeseheads were doffed in mourning all over Wisconsin. Now Favre has hinted at retiring many times before, but just to show that this time he meant it, at the end of his press conference, he just lightly knocked his throwing arm against the mic stand, and it fell off. See, he said.
None too soon.
None too soon. Carl, how did Sarah do in our quiz?
Very well. Three correct answers. So, Sarah, you win our prize.
Oh, thank you so much.
Congratulations. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as they can. Each correct answer, of course, now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
A tie for first place, Peter. Roy Blunt Jr. and Paul Provenza each has 3 points. Amy Dickinson has 2.
All right, Amy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. A small explosive device damaged an empty Army recruiting station in blank on Thursday morning.
Times Square.
Right. During an official visit on Monday, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said that no event could break the brotherly ties between Iran and blank.
Iraq.
Yes. For the first time in 13 years, blank is no longer atop Forbes' list of the world's richest people.
Bill Gates.
Right. It's Warren Buffett. The corruption trial against Tony Rezko, the former donor to blank's campaign, began this week.
Barack Obama.
Right, a New Jersey woman was injured after she turned on the oven where her family had stored their stash of homemade blank.
homemade cherry bombs.
Yes, fireworks. Very good. Mm. Researchers have uncovered a rare childhood photograph of Blank with her teacher, Ann Sullivan.
Helen Keller.
Right. Allegations that one contestant used to be a stripper. The first big scandal on the current season of Blank.
American Idol.
Yes. Police are searching for a suspect who left his blank behind during a convenience store robbery in Des Moines, Iowa.
That would be his pants.
No. Even better, his filled out W-2 form. Listen.
In his pants.
We don't know much here at this show, but we have learned this. If you're going to rob a store, don't bring anything with you. Don't bring your driver's license. Don't bring your resume.
But they do make
a
good point, though. You could be robbing all the liquor stores you want, but don't mess with the IRS.
Yeah, but don't leave a filled out W-2 form with your name and address.
Even though you would want the backup withholding, right?
Yeah, well, obviously.
Want that.
That's true, because otherwise you have to send whatever you steal back to the IRS later.
It's
police,
just messy.
They haven't identified the subject publicly, but they aren't in any rush to find him. They say, quote, we have his information. Carl, how did Amy do on our quiz?
Amy had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers for 14 more points. Ooh. Amy now has 16 points. And
well done. Wow. Amy, that was impressive. We have flipped a coin. Roy has elected to go second. So here we go. You're up next, Roy. Fill in the blank. In a speech this week, President Bush marked the 5th anniversary of the creation of the Department of blank.
Homeland Security.
Right. 3 Democratic challengers failed in their attempt to unseat blank from his Ohio congressional seat.
Gosh, there's somebody who's running for Congress in the middle of all this stuff?
Well, he's in Congress. He's running for re-election.
Oh, I don't know.
Dennis Kucinich.
Oh.
That's why he had to quit the presidential race.
I see.
According to a BBC radio documentary, the Hell's Angels attempted to assassinate blank after the infamous Altamont concert.
Mick Jagger.
Yes, very good.
Mick Jagger.
The Associated Press and the New York Times both had to kill a bulletin that mistakenly said that President Bush had blanked.
Had blanked.
No. had resigned over allegations of plagiarism. It wasn't President Bush. It was one of his aides.
Oh.
A publicist confirmed that the actor blank has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Patrick Swayze.
Right. In a controversial move, federal officials unleashed a man-made flood in the blank this week.
In the South.
No, in the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
Australian rescue workers hurried through thick bushland this month to rescue a trapped man and his blank.
Good Lord. And me.
Nope. His paragliding chihuahua. Just a routine paragliding trip for Paul Hansen and his 4-year-old chihuahua, Emma, until the duo found themselves dangling from a tree more than 100 feet above the ground. Hansen said that Emma, quote, knew that we were in danger, but she didn't panic or anything, unquote. For her part, Emma swore she wouldn't let the experience stop her from paragliding again. The chihuahua said, quote, anything to get me out of the purse every once in a while. Carl, how did Roy do on our quiz?
3 correct answers, Peter. For 6 more points, Roy now has 9, but Amy Dickinson maintains the lead with 16 points.
Wow.
What?
That's right. Beauty and smarts go together.
All right, so, Carl, how many does Paul Provenza need to win?
7 correct answers, Peter. Mm.
All right. Paul, you ready for it? Here we go.
I'm as ready as
fill in the blank.
Yes, sir.
To make sure their delegates will count, officials in Florida and Michigan are considering holding blanks a second time.
Primaries.
Right. An industry group reported that the percentage of blank loans that are overdue or in default hit an all-time high.
Home mortgage.
Right. According to CNN, congressional documents show that blank airlines flew thousands of passengers on planes that inspectors had ruled unsafe.
American Airlines.
No, Southwest.
Southwest Airlines.
To settle a class action lawsuit, the makers of herbal supplement blank agreed to refund $23.3 million
Herbalife.
To their customers. No, Airborne.
Airborne.
A suburban Chicago man, trying not to be late for his son's tennis game, got into trouble with police after he blanked.
Exploded.
No, landed his private plane on the golf course next door. NASA released the first ever photographs of an avalanche on blank this
Mars.
Week. Yes. Love and Consequences, Margaret B. Jones' account of her life as a gang drug runner, is
Lies.
The latest memoir to be revealed as, in
Lies.
Fact, totally bogus.
Right.
A Minnesota man is facing assault charges after attacking another man with a folder containing his blank.
Folder containing his tax returns.
No, the folder contained his anger management class homework.
No. No.
Sure, Justin Bowden attacked 2 people with his anger management homework. At a bus stop in Minnesota, but everybody knows he's got anger issues. That's why he was on his way to anger management class.
I like that guy.
The excuse didn't fly with police, who used the homework to track Bowden down and arrest him.
So he left the homework at the scene?
Presumably. They, yeah, you know, their papers bright. Saying, right. Don't hit people with your folder.
I call that ironic.
Yeah. Carl, did Paul Provenza do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers, Peter, but Paul had just 4 correct
answers.
Oh, my
goodness.
So with 16 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's champion.
Well done, Amy.
You know, I said I was going to bring a little extra awesome today, and I think I did.
It's like you won the Mensa Beauty Palette.
Right. Yeah, that's how it feels.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists how John McCain is going to spend the next few months while waiting around to find out who the Democratic nominee is going to be. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring, catalog at lumberliquidators.com. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, or celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abeid. Now, panel, what is on John McCain's agenda while he waits for a Democratic opponent? Amy Dickinson.
John McCain's going to take the next few months to rewire his wife, Cindy.
Paul Provenza.
Actually, John McCain is going to be taking juggling lessons. He's going to get up to 3 trillion balls so he can handle the budget deficit.
And Roy Blunt Jr.
He is going to spend this time not getting any younger.
Well, if John McCain does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, Paul Provenza, Roy Blunt Jr. You're great. And thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you all next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.